Wishing everyone a great Wintersman. It should be an uplifting Wintersman with a lot of Torah learning and Dveikus in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're going to be starting in Ritz Hashem now on Daf Lamed Vav Lamed Beis, the third perek, which basically comprises two subjects. Each subject in itself is very complex and engrossing. One is the subject of Bishul, Moleches Bishul, which is one of the 439 Malachos of Shabbos. It's actually listed on Daf Ayin Gimel Amid Beis. Bishul is in the Mishnah Daf Ayin Gimel Amid Beis, which lists the 39 Malachos. Bishul is number 11. Now, the reason why I mentioned to you that it's number 11, which seems like a very insignificant fact, is because the 11 Malachos at the very beginning of the Mishnah of the 39 form a unit, and that's called the unit of Sidura de Pas. Okay, we'll write this down soon. Sidura de Pas, which means preparing a loaf of bread, and it takes you from plowing and planting all the way up to the end of this whole long process in which we have a pas, we have a loaf of bread to eat. So that's called Sidura de Pas. And the final clincher in this entire system, or in this progression, is Moleches Bishul. And one of the two major topics in the third perek is Moleches Bishul. Now keep in mind that Moleches Bishul splits into two. There's D'oraisa and there's D'rabbanan. And most of our work is going to be on D'rabbanan. On a D'oraisa level, you're only chayev for Moleches Bishul if you actually take a pot, and we're talking on Shabbat, on Shabbos itself, and you cook in the pot on Shabbos. Now exactly how you do that and who does that, let's say for example if Reuven turns on the fire and then Shimon puts the pot on the fire, the pot at this point is empty, and then Levi comes and puts something inside the pot. You know, there are many, many different ways in which you can join a whole group of people involved in Bishul. But the bottom line is that we're talking about something that's not cooked, and you cook it on Shabbos. In the language of the Mishnah that I mentioned earlier on Daf Ayin Gimel Amid Beis, the malacha, the name of the malacha that's given by the Mishnah is Ofeh, which literally means baking. And perhaps at some point we'll be able to ask the question and answer the question why the Mishnah prefers Ofeh over Mevashel. I would have said that the more common case of cooking would be Bishul. Ofeh is baking. Why does the Mishnah prefer baking over cooking? Ofeh over Bishul. So that's a very interesting discussion. So let's get back to Bishul D'oraisa, and then we have what's called Bishul D'rabbanan. Now, if you have a flowchart here, then Bishul D'rabbanan itself splits into two. And one is called Chazara, and the other is called Shehiyah. Okay, we'll get this down soon. I'm just giving a very superficial overview here of what we have to do. Now, in both cases of Shehiyah and Chazara, we're not involved in Bishul D'oraisa, and that is for two reasons. In the case of Shehiyah, we cannot be involved in Bishul D'oraisa. Why? Yeah, when did he put the pot on the fire?
Before
Shabbos. So that by definition is not Moleches Bishul. Although, again, I don't want to confuse you, there is a sheet of Beis Shammai that says that there's something called Shvisa on Shabbos, even from a Malacha that you began on Erev Shabbos. But we don't accept the sheet of Beis Shammai, we accept the sheet of Beis Hillel. You can only be Chayev for violating Shabbos for what you do on Shabbos itself. So Shehiyah, which means placing a pot on the fire or in the stove before Shabbos, although it may be D'rabbanan, it could never, by definition, could never be D'oraisa, because the action of the human being took place on Erev Shabbos. Not so in the case of Chazara. In the case of Chazara, he takes a pot and puts it on the fire on Shabbos. Why is that only D'rabbanan? That's for a whole different reason. Not because he started Erev Shabbos, but because of what? the food is already what?
Cooked.
Is already cooked. Okay, again, these are just broad strokes. We're going to get into many, many different details, but so let's begin the Mishnah. And the Mishnah says the following. Kira. Okay, what's a Kira? Now, we have various pictures here, but basically, a Kira is a kind of stove that has room for two different pots on top of the fire. So you have the fire that's trapped in the stove itself, and is like a cooktop, you might call it, which has room for two different pots, two kideros. And that's called a Kira. We'll see as we go along why the Mishnah focuses on a Kira when there are many other options for how you cook something. You might cook something inside the stove, you might cook something on a cooktop that only has room for one pot, but right now we're dealing with a Kira. So just memorize the fact that a Kira is a stove that has a top for two different kideros. Now, the Mishnah wants to know, are you allowed to put a pot onto the Kira with food in it on Erev Shabbos and allow it to cook on Shabbos? Can you do that? And the Mishnah says, Nosnim, I'm skipping two words, we'll come back to those two words, Nosnim Aleha Tavshil, you're allowed to place a pot with food in it on Erev Shabbos and leave it to cook on Shabbos. Okay then? So the Mishnah is telling me that in this case, which we'll see exactly what the case is, there is no Isur Derabanan of Shehiyah. However, the Mishnah goes on to say that Begefes Ubeitzim in another scenario, and again we'll talk about that scenario in just a minute, Lo Yitain. He's not allowed to place the pot on the fire. So again, the Mishnah is now comparing and contrasting two cases. Case number one is called Kash Ugvava, and case number two is called Gefes and Eitzim. What do these words mean, and why does the Mishnah prohibit you in the second case of Gefes v'Eitzim, and the Mishnah is permissible, permits it in the case of Kash and Gvava? Now, both Kash and Gvava relate to the same object, which is called a Shibolet. How do you translate Shibolet into English?
Stalk.
A stalk? Okay. And there are two parts to the stalk. One part is called the Kash, and the other part is called the Gvava. Now, what is Kash? Kash means a kind of material which easily gets used up. It gets burnt up, so to speak. Okay then? And the Kash is called, Rashi says, the Znovos Hashibolim, if you see that second Rashi in the Mishnah. Znovos, which means the tail of the Shibolis. So when you cut down this Shibolis, this stalk, the tail part, the end part, is called Kash. And Gvava is the rest of the Shibolis after you cut off the tip or the back of the Shibolis. Again, we'll get a bit better picture of it as we go along. This is sort of secondary for us. Rashi tells us how you call a Gvava in French, in Old French, and he says that it's called Ishtobulia.
Sounds like straw.
Oh, Ishtobulia is straw.
I don't know, this whole thing sounds like straw.
But what does anybody know what the word Ishtobulia means?
I saw a source once that has this ancient French and translated into modern Hebrew.
Right, we could research that if we have time.
My understanding is that the kash is straw, which is what's left over after you take the wheat.
Okay.
Separate the wheat from it.
And what's the word for gvava, though?
The gvava is what's left in the ground. Our straw calls it stubble. It's left
stubble.
In the ground.
Stubble, okay. So if you see, the French word is very similar to the English word, right? The French word is also the stubble, if you see the word stubble in Rashi, right? You see that? In any event, these pieces of straw and stubble make it permissible to do what's called shehir. So what is conceptually common to this resha, the first part of the Mishnah, of kash and gvav? And the answer is that these are substances that burn and they don't leave coal behind them. Now the Hebrew word for coal is called gecholim in plural. Now, yeah, coals. When you take wood, which is the next case in the Mishnah of Eitzim, and you burn Eitzim, they turn into gecholim, they turn into coal. Or, for example, Gefes, which is called Psoles Shel Shumshamin. So when they used to take sesame and they would extract the oil from the sesame, what's left after they extracted the oil, or, for example, in the case of olives, which is called Zeitim, after they subjected the Zeitim to a process of removing its oil, what was left was something called Gefes. And Gefes and Eitzim are more problematic. Why? Because they create Gecholim. And what's the problem of Gecholim? The Mishnah says, Lo Yiten. Don't put a pot on the fire, even on Erev Shabbos, in order to allow the food to cook on Shabbos, if the heat is coming from Gefes and Eitzim. Because if so, then we're afraid of what's called Shema Yechate B'Gecholim. So these are the three words in Rashi that are very crucial that I want you to underline. If you take a look at the words in Rashi, Ad She Yigrof, The last three words in that Rashi you should underline, because that's the key. Those three words hold the key to everything that we're learning about now. And that's called Shema Yechate B'Gecholim. Okay, so we'll talk now a little bit about those three words. Shema Yechate B'Gecholim. Let me give you the following scenario. Let's say I put my pot on this fire on Erev Shabbos. Shabbos enters at 6 p.m. I put it on the fire at 5 p.m. And we're going to be eating our meal at 8 p.m. What might happen is that I want to intercede, I want to intervene in order to speed up the process of cooking so that my food will be well cooked for my meal at 8 p.m. And in that sense, what I might be tempted to do is called Yechate B'Gecholim. Again, the word gecholim means what? Coals. And what does chitui mean?
Poking
or stoking. And what happens is that in such a case, if I would, heaven forbid, you know, poke the coals in order to heat up the fire, I violate what's called meleches havara. So again, we're going back to our list on Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Beis of 39 melachos. And we had a malacha that was called Bishul. And then we have another malacha which is called Mavir. Mem Beis Ayin Yud Resh. And Mavir, otherwise called Havara, is a subject that we discussed at great length back in Elul. You remember perhaps the sheet of Rav Shimon that Mavir, even though it's Makalkel, he's Chayev, right? Chovel Mavir. So Mavir means to create a fire. So creating a fire is Mavir. In this case, he's got food that's going to cook on Shabbos, and if he heats up the coals by doing this act of stirring the coals, of poking the coals, then not only does the fire go up, which in itself is a malacha called Mavir, but in addition, by speeding up the process of cooking, he's going to violate the malacha of Bishul. So we have now a serious problem. In the case of kash and gvava, where these are, you know, combustible materials that just go up in smoke and they don't create coals, there's no reason to suspect that maybe he'll do chitui b'gecholim. But in the case of Gefes and Eitzim, which are substances that as they burn, they form coal, then it's something that's going to tempt him to increase the level of heat by poking it. And if he does so, then he violates the Shabbos. However, even in the case B, as we called it, of Gefes v. Eitzim, the Mishnah gives two possible ways in which you're allowed to do Shehiyah. You're allowed to leave your pot on the fire in Erev Shabbos, even though there are Eitzim, there are coals, there's a way of heating it up. Number one is Ad Sheyigrof. Yigrof means to sweep. Now what we mean here is that he sweeps the Gecholim out of the Kira. If you happen to remember, the Kira looks like this, and it has an opening on the bottom, and that's where you put the fuel. And what you could do at some point is remove the coals from inside the oven. Now, let me ask two questions. Number one, once he removes the coals from inside the oven, then he has defeated his whole purpose. His purpose is to heat up the food and cook it. Once he removes the coals, then it's not going to cook. So what's the answer to that question, apparently?
There's still hot ash in there.
Exactly. There's still something hot in there. The heat is trapped inside the stove, and therefore the cooking process will continue. But now we ask the second question. Okay, we now see that he can still achieve his purpose, his goal, and keep the food hot, even though he removed the coals. But what does he gain? Why does the Mishnah advocate that he removes the coals? And what's the answer to that question, Rabbi Osai? Once he removes the coals?
He can't be tempted to.
Yeah, he can't be tempted to poke the coals. The coals are just going to extinguish.
It stays hot.
Correct.
Not so quickly, but
it stays hot. But now you have a hot. Now you have a hot stove, but you don't have coals inside the stove, and that basically brings you back to the first case of the Mishnah, which was Kash and Gvava. In the case of Kash and Gvava, we had no objection to putting the pot on the fire because since it's being heated up by Kash and Gvava, there are no coals, and he's not going to be tempted to poke the coals. There's no chitui b'gecholim. So too in the case of Gefes v'Eitzim, if he does what's called Achiyigro, if he does Grefa and he removes the coals from inside the oven, then once again it's an oven that doesn't have coals in it, and there's no possibility of Chitui B'Kachol. The other possibility, says the Mishnah, is Achiyitein Esha Efer. What he's allowed to do is he's allowed to sprinkle ashes on top of the gecholim. Now, what that's going to do is that's going to slow down the process of heat, or if you flip it around and say speed up the process of cooling off the gecholim, right? As long as you don't feed any new flames, you know, any new fuel into this oven, the gecholim are slowly but surely over the course of time going to extinguish. But now what he does is in order to speed up the process of extinguishing, what he's going to do is he's going to be mafazer, he's going to spread out ashes over the coals. And what we're going to try to prove, and it's going to take a while, is that this is basically a symbolic act that's meant to give him a memory device. A person doesn't operate in two opposite directions. He doesn't do one thing and then reverse it and do the other thing. So if he's pouring ashes over to the coals, apparently, you know, if he has a brain in his head and a purpose in his mind, then what is he trying to do? Is he heating up the coals or cooling off the coals? He's cooling off the coals, right? He's speeding up the process of the cooling process. That's going to remind him that he shouldn't speed up the process by doing chitui. So in those two cases, the Mishnah allows you to keep your pot on the fire as long as you put it there, of course, Erev Shabbos, which is called Shehiyah. And even though you are heating up this Kira with Gefes V'Eitzim, which are materials that make coals, we're going to suspend the Chitui, the Shema Yechate B'Gecholim that we underlined in Rashi, because A, there are no coals in the first case. He was, did grefa, he removed the coals. Or B, he did a symbolic act. So Rabbo said, what does this all remind you of? In modern terminology, what we do.
A plata.
Okay, good, excellent. The difference between what you say and I say is that you say it in Hebrew and I say it in Yiddish. Okay, what's it called in Yiddish?
A blech. Putting the aluminum foil on the gas to raise the fire under the blech reminds you not to...
Right, so there are different ways of doing it. Let's talk about two things. Let's talk about the blech itself for a second, and then we can talk about the knobs on the blech. So if there are knobs on the blech, then you have a problem of chitur. Meaning you might be tempted, in the same way back in the Gemara's time, you were tempted to increase the heat by doing chitur. Here you might increase the heat by turning the knob. So, but let's go back first to the blech itself. How would you define the blech? Let's assume that the blech is like Eitzim, Gefes V'Eitzim. So how are we allowed to leave our pot on the blech on Erev Shabbos? The answer is it's what? It's Garuf. It's Garuf. Why is it Garuf? Because since there are no coals there, so it's like a Garuf. Right? No, you can't poke any coals on a blech. But on the other hand, we're not in the clear yet because we still have a problem that Shem Yechata, not on the coals, but Shem Yechata on the channels. So what do we do then? Either we cover the channels or we remove the channels, you know, remove the buttons and so forth and so on. So these are going to be the various methods in a modern context in which we achieve our mission. Okay. That's Roman numeral number one. Now we get to what I call Hakafa Bet. And this is the machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Okay. Beit Shammai Omrim Chamin Avalot Tavshil. The entire discussion that we had in the Reish of our Mishnah allowing Shehiyah under those circumstances that were delineated in the Mishnah, says Beit Shammai, that's only with regard to chamin. Chamin means liquids. Okay, let's say you heated up water in order to make yourself a tea on Shabbos. So you're allowed to keep the hot water on the fire if you put it there Erev Shabbos, as long as you fulfilled all the conditions. Let's say, for example, if it's a kira, which is being heated up by Gefes V'Eitzim, you did grefa, or you put the afer on top, those two methods. That's okay, says Beit Shammai, but only vis-a-vis chamin, liquids. And the reason for that is because in the case of liquids, once the liquid gets heated up, there's no need to go beyond that. You know, if you have hot water, then that's all you need. Avalot tavshil, but not with regard to solids. When you're cooking solid foods, Beit Shammai are worried, even in the case of Achi Yigrof or Achi Yitein Esa Efer, we have to prohibit this because the food gets better and better and better as it cooks longer and longer. What do I have in mind? Again, this is again for Ashkenazim. What?
A chalent,
let's say, for example. Again, it could be that at some point or other the chalent starts burning. But generally speaking, you know, a chalent could go for hours, and the longer it goes, the better. And we'll get into that as we go along. Ubeis Hillel omrim chamin v'tavshil. So according to Beis Hillel, whatever the Mishnah was matir, whatever the Mishnah permitted, that's permissible straight across the board, not just for water but also for solids. Why? Because since he did grefa, right, the sweeping, and he swept out the coals, or nasan esaifer ala esh, we no longer have to worry about shema yavo lachtos, that he might come to do chitui because he's solved that problem of chitui. So oddly enough, Beit Shammai will prohibit Shehiyah even in the case of a Garuf V'Katum. Garuf V'Katum means even in the case where he swept out the coals, if he is leaving on the fire solid foods. That's called a Tavshil. And Rashi is bothered by this question. Why would Beit Shammai go so far? After all, the logic of Beis Hillel is very compelling. Once you remove the coals, or you've sprinkled the coals with ashes, you've really covered your bases. There's no serious reason why we should be choshesh for chitui. So Rashi, Dibra Maschil Beit Shammai Omrim, adds the following. He says, Beit Shammai Omrim Nosin Ola Oleha, you could put on this Kira Chamin, Achar Shegarfa, after you swept out the coals, the Lo Tzricha Livshule. These Chamin have already been heated up. There's no need to get involved in heating it more and more. As long as it remains on the in the stove, and the stove has a certain element of heat to it, it's going to heat up, it's going to maintain the heat of the water. He is not tempted in any way. Leko lemigzar, there's no reason to be afraid. Shema yechata, because the liquids have reached their maximum heat as far as he's concerned. That they're hot enough. I mean, you could always make it hotter and hotter, but there's no point to doing so. Avolo Tavshil, says Rashi. Okay. Now, there's a lot to this Rashi here, but if you'll allow me, just for pedagogical reasons, to make life a little easier for myself, I'm going to just skip to the last two words in this Rashi, and I'm going to ask you to underline it. Rashi says, Mechze Kimavasha. Does everybody have that? Can you underline that? Mechze kimavashel. What does this mean? You see, Rashi, in the first interpretation of Beit Shammai, says that there's still a problem of chitui here. Now, this is difficult, because if he sweeps out the coals, then what sense, what logic would compel the person to poke the coals? The coals are already outside of the oven. So Rashi drops the first pshat, and he offers a second pshat. You'll see Aleph Nun, which means inami, a second pshat. And Rashi says in the inami, niskaima machshavto, he's very happy that this cooking process is, or the heating process is continuing. He started on Erev Shabbos, and he's very excited about the fact that it continues on Shabbos. U'michzi kimavashel. Those are the two key words in Rashi. What does michzi kimavashel mean?
It looks like.
Excellent. It looks like, it appears like bishul.
Is that like a maradayin issue?
I don't think so, because we're talking about justifying a gzera derabanan of bishul. You know, this means that if he violates this gzera, you know, we can really take him to task. Again, we can't put him to death because he didn't violate bishul d'oraisa. He put the pot on the fire on Erev Shabbos. But on the other hand, he's cooking it on Shabbos. So I would say mechzei kimavashel means that although he's not going to actually poke the coals are already extracted, they've been removed, swept out of the kira, but nevertheless, it's in some sense it's related to bishul. I would say the fact that the spectator looks at it and sees it as bishul, that's a barometer, that's a proof positive that it is bishul. Again, it's not bishul technically on a d'oraisa level, because again, he put the pot on the fire when? On Erev Shabbos. But on the other hand, since the pot is cooking on Shabbos itself, then it looks like bishul. You know, not everyone will know that he put the pot on the fire on Erev Shabbos. You know, they see that this cholent that he's cooking is cooking on Shabbos, and therefore Beit Shammai prohibits it. Now, the question we have to ask is, well, what would Rashi say if it was totally cooked on Erev Shabbos? Now, as I said before, in the case of a cholent, one could argue that even if it's totally cooked on Erev Shabbos, it continues to improve the longer it cooks. But let's say you get to the point where you just want to maintain the heat, and it's cooked to the top. You know, you need no more cooking. This is the way we like our cholent. And he did that on Erev Shabbos. But now he wants to keep the cholent hot. You know, we aren't like the tzdukim. The tzdukim used to eat cold food on Shabbos. We eat hot food on Shabbos. So how does he maintain the heat? So it could be possible that in that case, Beit Shammai would agree that you're allowed to put it on the stove on Erev Shabbos and leave it on Shabbos. Why? Because you already removed the coals, and the stove is only serving what purpose? Not to cook, but rather to
keep it warm.
So if it's keeping it warm, that's not mechsei kimavasha. Or maybe Rashi would go even a step further and say that according to Beit Shammai, even if it's totally cooked on Erev Shabbos, and if you keep it going, it's going to get ruined. It'll get it'll be
overcooked.
Right? It'll be negative overcooked. Then even so, Rashi in Beit Shammai would say mechsei kimavasha. My personal, agenda would be to say that Rashi holds Mechsei Kimavashel if some element of cooking is going on Shabbos. So Beit Shammai says, well, look, you started the process on Erev Shabbos, the process continues on Shabbos itself. That's already Mechsei Kimavashel. Nobody knows that this Kira is, is Gara Fakatum, and nobody knows that you put it on Erev Shabbos. It looks too similar to Bishul. And therefore, Chazal, the Chachamim, according to Beit Shammai, prohibited it. Beis Hillel, on the other hand, they don't have this concept of Mechsei Kimavashel. Beis Hillel is going straight with the concept of Shema Yechata. And Shema Yechata only applies when there are coals inside the oven. You might be tempted to poke the coals. In this case, you've already removed the coals from the oven. So let's just summarize what we've said so far. We have a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai regarding Shehiyah, in a case where he put his pot on the fire on Erev Shabbos, removed the coals, or alternatively sprinkled the Ephron on the coals. Beit Shammai is only willing to allow you to do that for what? Chamin meaning
liquids
for water and so forth. And Beis Hillel go a step further, they're allowing you straight across the board, even a Tavshil. But again, there are two conditions that have to be met. Condition number one is that you did this on Erev Shabbos, and condition number two, it was a garuf, which means you removed the coals or you put the afer on top. Then and only then does Beis Hillel allow you to do this on Erev Shabbos. And finally, we get to the last piece in the Mishnah, another machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai omrim notlim avolo machzirin. Beit Shammai say that in those cases that you're allowed to keep your pot on the oven on Shabbos, you're allowed to remove the pot from the oven on Shabbos. So let's take, for example, what case does Beit Shammai allow you to keep this pot on the oven on Shabbos? What's inside the pot? Chamin, liquids. Say, Beit Shammai, you're allowed to remove this pot that has liquids in it, pour your tea. I'm a lo machzirin, but you can't replace it back onto the kira. And again, if we use the two words of Rashi and Beit Shammai again, what is it when you put it back on the kira? It's mechsei kimavashel. Again, it looks like bishul. Because what's he doing? He's taking a pot on Shabbos and putting it on a hot stove. To the same extent that we allowed him to remove the pot on Shabbos, he's allowed to replace the pot and put it back onto the kira. But again, only if it's garuf or nosanasa efer. And even though we're dealing with a tavshil, Beis Hillel say that a tavshil is okay. You have cooking food, and it's being not only taken off a hot plate or a hot oven, but you're also allowed to put it back onto the oven, and it doesn't look like bishul. This is not because Beis Hillel never accepted this concept of mechsei kimavashel. Ella what? You might argue that it is gzeira shem yechata, but there's no gzeira shem yechata because he was goref es hakira. He swept out the coals from the oven. Okay, that is the Mishnah. And again, I apologize that we're moving very slowly, but again, it's very complicated. The stuff that we did until now is easy compared to what's around the bed. So let's start the more complicated part of the sugya, and again, we're going to try to proceed with caution, very slowly. And these two pages that I gave you, if you can hold on to them, because, you know, we're not ready for this yet, but hopefully we'll be ready for it maybe tomorrow or the day after. Iboilahu, the Gemara has a suffix. How do we interpret the Mishnah? Now, which words of the Mishnah are now being investigated or analyzed? The Mishnah says at the very end of the Mishnah, it says lo yachzir. So again, if you look at the beginning of the Mishnah says, I'm sorry, my mistake. The Mishnah at the very beginning of the Mishnah says lo yiten. Okay, so you want to underline those two words, lo yiten. And at this point, what does lo yiten mean? Lo yachzir hu. We interpret those words lo yitain as lo yachzir. In other words, again, lo yachzir means if he took the pot off the oven on Shabbos, he's not allowed to replace it onto the oven. Because again, keep in mind, there are hot coals inside this oven, and those hot coals are going to cause bishul, right? You're going to be cooking your pot, so you can't put it on Shabbos. And Rav Ossai, at this point, if he would violate this lo yitain lo yachzir, what kind of a violation would he be guilty of? Doraisa. I'm adding the word doraisa because until now, Harvey, we've been discussing derabbanans. Now we're talking about doraisa. Why? Because keep in mind, lo yitain means he's got coals inside the oven. It's Shabbos, and he's putting a pot of food on the flame, or shall we say, on top of the oven where there's a flame coming out. That would be a violation of Bishul Doraisa. And then the Mishnah says, Achi Yigrof O Achi Yitain Es Ha'efer, that even though he's placing the pot on the fire, on the stove, excuse me, on Shabbos itself, that's permissible, because he removed the coals from the oven. So basically what the Mishnah is saying is as follows. If the coals are still inside the oven and you want to put the pot on the fire on Shabbos, that's Meleches Bishul Doraisa. If on the other hand you remove the coals, then you're allowed to put it back onto the fire, and it's not what? It's not a Doraisa, but it's not even a Derabbanan. It's perfectly mutter. And then Rav Ossai, which Shita would that reflect then? Who is the Shita, who is the Tana, who allowed Chazara on Shabbos? Meaning putting it on the pot, putting it on the oven on Shabbos. Beis Hillel, exactly. So then, this would be Beis Hillel. This would reflect the Shita of Beis Hillel. Alternatively, we could say, but this would be really pushing it, that the Mishnah is talking about a case of chamin, of liquids, and then it could even be meaningful according to Beit Shammai. Oh. Now, if the subject of the Mishnah is what we call chazara, which means putting the pot on the stove on Shabbos, and here the Mishnah gets very nervous about it and says, well, lo yitain, you shouldn't be putting it on there because the coal's inside, unless you take the coals out. Then the Gemara says the implication is avolishos, but if he would put the pot on the fire on Erev Shabbos, then mashin, he's allowed to do so. Afal pisha eno garuf vi eno katum. Okay, now the Mishnah introduced the word katum. Don't be confused. The word katum is an abbreviation for Achi Yitain Es Ha'efer. Okay, so you may want to write that down in your notes. Achi Yitain Es Ha'efer, meaning putting the ashes on, is the same as katum. So usually what we're going to, the language that we're going to be employing is always a garuf v'katum, which means it's either garuf, that you swept out the coals, or katum, you cooled off the coals by placing ashes on top. So, mashin, the Mishnah now, according to this interpretation, is permitting even shehiya on an eno garuf vi eno katum. So, Rabosai, am I allowed to put a pot on the fire on Erev Shabbos on an open fire and let it cook on Shabbos? The answer is yes. According to this pshat, the Gemara is going to now offer a second pshat, but in this first alternative? Yes. Umani. Then who is the author of the Mishnah who permits Shehiya even in an Eino Goruf V'Eino Katuv? Chananya hi. The author of our Mishnah is Chananya. This is Chananya we learned in a Braisa. Chananya Omer. Kol Shehu Kemichel Ben Josai. We'll explain that in a minute. Mutar Lishhosa Gabikira Afal Pish Eino Goruf V'Eino Katuv. Okay, Rabbi Osai. Now we're introducing not only a new shita into the equation, but a new terminology. As I said to you before, you know, the challenge of learning Kira is getting the terminology down. There's so many different terms, and they, you know, sort of like they bamboozle you at once. You know, they throw it all at you at once. What's Kemichel Ben Josai? So Ben Josai, I'm not sure if they were Jews. I have a feeling that they weren't Jewish, but I'm not sure. These were the bandits, and they were on the run, and they would eat meat that was uncooked. Now, you know, I'm sure you're all thinking of sushi, but let's assume, just to make life easy, there's no such thing as meat sushi. I know today there is such a thing as meat sushi. Again, my stomach just turns over just thinking about eating raw meat, but let's assume it's impossible to eat raw meat. But at what point is it cooked enough that it's humanly edible? So to find the answer to that question, we have to knock on the doors of the Ben Josai, of the bandits, because these are the guys that have no time to cook their meat because they're after them, so they put it on the fire and then they gobble up the meat as soon as they possibly can. Let's assume that Kemichel Ben Josai means it was cooked 50% of its normal cooking. Meaning, let's say you would take an hour to cook something fully cooked. Okay, that the terminology for that we'll get to later is called Bishel Kol Tzarko. Then Kemichel Ben Josai would be a half hour's worth of cooking. Let's just assume. Okay, I'm just giving you just to help us get through this little glitch here, you know, this challenge. So Chananya says the following: that once you cook food on Erev Shabbos, Kemichel Ben Josai, which means let's say halfway, or according to some it means one third of the way, then having reached that point that the Ben Josai would eat it without getting stomach aches, is then mutul l'sholsal gavi kirafel pishenu gorfei dekotu. You're allowed to do shahia. So it's interesting. If let's say a half hour before knisat Shabbat, I would put meat in a pot on an open fire, and 50% of the cooking of that meat is going to take place before Shabbos, and the other 50% is going to take place on Shabbos, according to Chananya, is that mutter or asur? That's mutter. Because once it reached Kemichel Ben Josai on Erev Shabbos, I can keep it on an open fire. That's called a Kira She'eino Goruf Eino Katuv. Even though half of its Bishul, or maybe even two-thirds of its Bishul, is going to take place on Shabbos.
So in other words, it's partially cooked before you put it on.
Correct.
Which is what we do today. Yeah.
Well, yes and no, because it could be that we're going to require a goruf a katum for any kind of a shahiyah, not like Chananya. Because although the Gemara at this point is defending Chananya, in the next word in the Gemara it says, oh, the Gemara is going to reject Chananya. So I'm not sure if we accept Chananya. And my brother should be Michael me because his name is Chananya, but I don't know if we accept Chananya. So again, according to Chananya, as long as there was partial cooking, which means Kemichel Ben Josai and Erev Shabbos, then you're allowed to do Shehiyah on Shabbos on an open fire. It's a Eino Goruf Eino Katuv. Chachamim disagree. They reject Chananya, as we'll soon see. Now, according to Chananya, the question that begs itself to be asked is, what did you gain by cooking it partially on Erev Shabbos? So in order to understand Chananya, we have to introduce a whole new concept into our study here, which is one of the most important concepts in the third parak of Shabbos, and that's called Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, which means that in order to violate Bishul, You have to have a substance that's not cooked. It's raw. If it's already considered cooked, and you cook it a second time, then you're not chayav for bishul. Ein bishul achar bishul. See?
Is this connected to the concept of taking bread that's partially cooked, but not fully cooked, and then putting it back in an oven to finish it?
You talk about a Jew and a non-Jew. You mean the Jew partially cooked it, and then the guy cooked the rest of it.
That's correct.
So whether it's bishalaku, yeah, he's right. That if the Jew put it on the fire and it cooked, let's say a third of the way, and now the Jew takes it off the fire, the guy puts it back on the fire. Normally, we don't allow eating from cook, you know, guy who cooks for you, with certain very rare exceptions, but. So then it was already cooked by the Jew before the guy put it back onto the fire. That's a good point. It would also apply maybe to bishul basar mechala, because not only are you enjoined from eating meat and milk, you're not allowed to cook meat and milk. So what happens if Reuven went ahead and he cooked meat and milk, but it was only one third of its cooking? Shimon now, after taking it off the fire, puts it back on the fire, and he cooks it the next two-thirds of its bishul. So if we apply the principle of ein bishul achar bishul, which I'm not sure if it applies to basar b'chol, but if we do, then Shimon is completely exonerated from any punishment, because he didn't do anything wrong. It was already cooked. But getting back to Hananya, in the case of bishul achar bishul of Shabbos, Hananya says that what's the worst scenario here? What's the worst thing you're afraid of? You're afraid that if he left it on this open fire with the coals inside the oven on Erev Shabbos, and it only was partially cooked, you're afraid that he will do what? Chitui, and he'll start poking the charcoals in order to speed up the process of bishul. Well, in the worst case scenario, if he does that, he still has not violated the Isur bishul. I'm not saying that according to Chanan you're allowed to take something on Shabbos that's partially cooked and completely and cook it, but even if you would do so, in the worst case scenario, you would violate an Isur Drabbanan. And now you want to tell me, well, we're not allowed to leave it on the fire on Erev Shabbos because maybe he'll come to poke the fire, and if he comes to poke the fire, he'll violate Bishul Drabbanan. Says Chanan, that far we don't have to go. It's already cooked partially on Erev Shabbos. Ein bishul achar bishul. You're afraid maybe he'll do chitui to speed up the process. So what? Even if in the worst case, terrible karamba, he speeds up the process by doing chitui, still he would not come to bishul. Why? Because ein bishul achar bishul.
That's hamara. Still
derived the hamara. Oh, excellent question. Excellent question.
Very good.
That's a brilliant question. What about Malechus Hamor?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, actually, this fits with that too. Anyhow, I think this goes along with Ben's question. Is it Mari dying? So he said, no, it's kind of a separate Easter to do with Bishul on Shabbat. So I think a lot of it has to do with the effect on the person doing the Bishul, that somebody else who could have seen it would see that they're much calmer, right? So this is, and that fits into what he said. So this much calmer person who has food that is large already, let's say, at least edible. So they're
he's not
pressured
suspect.
Over no, but the way it looks that we were talking about other malachot, the video of it. So the guy maybe doesn't really want to do that much cooking. He's not that tempted anymore because he has something just about edible.
Right.
So a person viewing this would see, let's say, the difference between the person who really needs to still cook that item. And
so,
Shmuel,
you're hitting me with so many different things, and brilliant, but I would like to focus just on one point that you make, which is excellent. I was saying that the reason why Hananya is going to allow you to do Shehiyah is because it's already cooked, and if Ein Bishlach HaBishl, Shmuel's offering another pshat. Then maybe according to Hananya, there's no chashash of Chitui. We shouldn't worry about Chitui. Why? Because he has no issue over here. In the worst case scenario, it's already cooked. Again, it's only cooked Kibayachal Ben Josai, and he's not abandoned, but nevertheless, it's already cooked. If it's already cooked, so Hananya is not so worried about Chitui. Now you're getting another element in terms of the spectator who might suspect him. Maybe he's not going to suspect him in this case. Okay, let's leave that. Let's leave out Maris Ayin here because we got enough trouble without Maris. Oh, now we go to the next possibility. Oh, Dilma. Dilma means it's plausible to say Lishos Tnan. No, let's go back to Lo Yitain, right? The Mishnah says Lo Yitain, and we assumed in the first pshat that Lo Yitain means on Lo yitain means, what was the first Shabbos? Was lahachzer, correct? Yeah, lahachzer meaning was on Shabbos. Now the Gemara is saying no. Odilma lishos tanan. Lishos automatically means when? On Erev Shabbos. And then the Mishnah is rejecting Hananya. The Mishnah is saying lo yitain meaning don't put it on the fire on Erev Shabbos. Unless the igar for katuv in. Kotum in. If you got rid of the coals, then you're allowed to do shahia. But ilo, if the coals are in the oven and they're active, is low, then you're allowed to do shahia. And again, this means that we reject Hananya according to the second pshat, and this mission reflects the sheet of the Chachamim against Hananya, and they prohibit shahia. In other words, even though it reached Kemaychel ben Josai and Erev Shabbos, you're still not allowed to keep it on an open flame, but rather you have to remove the coals from the flame. That's called a gara for katum. For koshken, and the Mishnah doesn't even have to tell you at this point, it's understood that lahachzer, that certainly you're not allowed to put it on Shabbos on an open fire, unless you make it into a goof of a ketumah. So basically, there are two ways of interpreting the Mishnah. And let's understand these two ways on two different levels. One is on the semantic level in terms of interpreting the Mishnah, you know, literally translating the words of the Mishnah. Number two, on a conceptual level in terms of the halakhic principles that operate. On a semantical level, the Gemara is vacillating about what lo yitain is referring. Does lo yitain mean on Shabbos, which is called in the language of the Gemara lahachzir, or lo yitain means on Erev Shabbos, which is called in the language of the Gemara lo yishe? So again, chazara always means on Shabbos, and shehiyah means on Erev Shabbos. So that's the first level, in a sense, you know, the surface level of understanding the vacillation of the Gemara back and forth of this Eboilu. On a deeper level, in terms of the concepts in Halacha, it comes out like this. That in the first interpretation, Lo Yitain means on Shabbos, which means Chazara. And the Mishnah is prohibiting putting food on the fire on Shabbos. And as we said earlier, that would be a Meleches Bishul Doraisa. On the other hand, if we say that Lo Yitain means Lo Yishe, and it's referring to Erev Shabbos, the Mishnah is being much more machmir, much more strict, and it's prohibiting Shia leaving a pot on an open fire on Erev Shabbos. So if we go with the second pshat, the old Dilma, which is Lishos Tnan, that Lo Yitain means on Erev Shabbos you're not allowed to put the pot on the fire, then the Mishnah is telling me that the only way we're going to allow you to put food on the fire on Erev Shabbos is if you remove the coals from the stove. That's called a gara fakatav. If you haven't removed the coals from the stove, then we're afraid, shemi yechata, that you might start poking it in, and therefore we're not going to allow you to do shahir. How do you obviate the problem of shemi yechata? Through gara fakatav, by removing the coals from the oven. And the truth be told, I think the second interpretation of the Mishnah is much closer to the way we understood the Mishnah, because later on, when the Mishnah gets to Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai, that's where we're going to have machlokas about lo yachzir, right? Take a look at the end of the Mishnah. As we saw earlier, the Mishnah says, avolo machzirim, Beis Hillel omrim af machzirim. Machzirim means on Shabbos. Obviously, until this last paragraph in the Mishnah, the subject of the Mishnah was Erev Shabbos. And that's why the Mishnah uses two different terminologies. There's Lo Yitain, and then there's Lo Yachzir. Lo Yitain on Erev Shabbos, and Lo Yachzir on Shabbos itself. The Gemara in the first interpretation seems to have an agenda here to try to work out this Mishnah according to Hananya, and therefore assume that Lo Yitain means on Shabbos, allowing you to do Shehiyah on Erev Shabbos. And that reflects the Shita of Hananya. So let's just raise a few questions here, if anybody could take a note of these questions. Number one, if I hold like Hananya, and Hananya says that you're allowed to do Shehiyah on an open fire, assuming that it reaches Kemaychel ben Josai on Erev Shabbos, does Hananya therefore mean to say that even though the continual process of bishul is beneficial for the cooking, I'm not a ben josai. I would like to eat a tavshil that's cooked cold sarko completely, and therefore I might be tempted to do chitui on this open fire. The coals are still in there. Nevertheless, Hananya says we're not afraid of such a thing. Or perhaps maybe Hananya is not so revolutionary and so radical. Maybe Hananya is only saying that if a person is okay, he's satisfied with the partial cooking on Erev Shabbos, therefore we don't have the Gzeir of Shem Yechata. But leaving Hananya on the side, now we pick up the Chachamim, which means that we're going with the second shot in the Gemara, Odilma Lishos Tnan, and the Mishnah is saying, Lo Yite Mi, you're not allowed to put it there on Erev Shabbos, even though, presumably, it already reached the level of Kim Michael Ben Josai on Erev Shabbos, because we're afraid of Shem Yechata, because he has vested interest in bringing it to the state of fully cooked, of Bishul called Sarko. What would be the nature of that chitui? How severe of a violation would that incur? Since it already reached Kemaychel Ben Josai and Erev Shabbos, the Chachamim would say, I admit to you that even in the worst case scenario he does chitui, but still it's not Bishul Doraisa because it's already Mavushal. Or perhaps the Chachamim made a major jump over here, and they said the following, that two people could be chayav for Bishul on the same Tavshil. Reuven brought the tavshil to the state of Kemaychel Ben Josai. Then he took it off the fire. Shimon put it back on the fire and took it from Kemaychel Ben Josai and increased the bishul. Both Reuven and Shimon will be chayev. Reuven will be chayev for bringing it to the first stage of bishul, and Shimon will be chayev for completing the state of bishul. And therefore, the Chachamim say to Hananya, you haven't gained anything by cooking it on this open fire on Erev Shabbos to the point of Kemaychel Ben Josai, because if he's going to be tempted to speed up the bishul by doing chitui, he's going to violate bishul d'oraisa. So then the machlokes between Hananya and the Chachamim really touches on the whole nature of the Isur bishul d'oraisa. Whereas Hananya says that once it's a tavshil that's cooked, and halachically it's considered cooked once it reaches Kemaychel Ben Josai, you can never ever violate Melechus bishul on this tavshil. And the Chachamim say no, that despite the fact that it reached the state of Kemaychel Ben Josai, you can still violate the Isur bishul d'oraisa by taking it from Kemaychel Ben Josai all the way up to bishul kol tzarko. And the other way of interpreting the machlokas Hananya and Chacham, the first way that we approach, is that even the Chachamim agree that ain bishul achar bishul, once it reached Kemaychel Ben Josai and Erev Shabbos, no one could violate the Isur bishul. But nevertheless, the Chachamim think that niskayma machshavto, that if you're very eager to cook it all the way, then midrabbanan we have to consider this as bishul. But then it's machlokas on a midrabbanan level. Now the next Gemara, which we don't have time for today, which I'm going to ask you to prepare for tomorrow, this Tashma, which takes you almost to the end of the page, is basically going to read every part of the Mishnah according to the two interpretations of Lo Yite. So once we have this klar, as we say in Yiddish, it's clear to us that Lo Yite might be Lo Yachzir, which is the first interpretation, which means we're talking on Shabbos, but Shehi on Erev Shabbos is Mutter like Hananya. Or alternative, Lo Yite means Lo Yisheh on Erev Shabbos. Then we're going to use those two interpretations and go through every single section of the Mishnah one by one and see how the pieces of the puzzle fit into place. That's what the Gemara is going to do for us. That's what I call homework assignment number one. That should take you about an hour, if you really want to give yourself a lot of time. You can do it in less than an hour, but I'm giving you a full hour to do that, meaning if you really want to get it down, klar, as we say. Then we get to work homework assignment number two. And what I'd like to analyze with you is the possibility that Chazara on Shabbos is more severe than Shehiyah on Erev Shabbos. Now, according to Hananya, That's what we call in Yiddish upgaret. That goes without saying. Because Hananya allows Shehi on Erev Shabbos. He only prohibits Chazara on Shabbos. So that's okay. But the real issue is according to the Chachamim, because the Chachamim have two Isurim. They have one Isur called Shehiya, and they require a Gara for Katum, otherwise there's an Isur Shehiya on an open fire on Erev Shabbos. And they have Chazara as an Isur. Is there a fundamental difference between the two? Is one more Machmir than the other? And in order to analyze that, I'm going to ask you to look at Tosfos. Now look, I wrote Tosfos Divra Maschil Chamin Vitavshi. To go through that entire Tosfos is a project that I would leave for later on. But we have to read one very key line in Tosfos. So I'm going to ask you to be guided by this page that I worked on after midnight last night. And to try to study that. Okay then? I gave you one page, right? With two sides?
Yes.
Okay, great. So you have that. So that's the Tosfos there. Now that Tosfos is going to focus on Chazara. Okay then? We want to compare that to Shehiya to see if we can come to the conclusion that Shehiya and Chazara are two separate Isur. And by definition, they should not be equated. We shouldn't say both of them in the same breath. And for that we want to see the Rambam and the Ramban. Now I'm not expecting you to see all of that today, but at least, you know, get your feet wet with the Rambam at least, if not the Ramban. And then I wrote Ayin Ran al Arif, because for me it was a little bit challenging at that hour to get up the Ran on the Rif. So the Ran on the Rif is in the back of the Gemara. So I told you it's on Yud Zayin Amid Beis. There are two different paragraphs in the Ran. And hopefully by tomorrow I'll be able to photocopy those paragraphs for you, so you'll be able to add page 3 to this file. A lot of what we're going to discuss in tomorrow's shiur is based on those two Rashis that I asked you to underline. Number one, the Rashi at Sheyigrov. At the end, Rashi says, Shemi Yechata Begecholim. And number two, Avalo Tavshil, Rashi says, Umechse Kimavashil. That's going to be the main hak, so to speak, of tomorrow's shiur. That in the case of Chazara, we have something called Mechse Kimavashil. And in the case of Shehiya, what we have is Shemi Yechata Begecholim. And that's it, my friends, for today. And I want to again wish everyone a great Zman.
Amen.
How was the Shia today? I mean, was it a little bit too complicated? It was good. Okay, there's a lot of new terminology here. For me also, this is complicated. But what can I tell you? This is one of the most important prakim in Masechta Shabbos. The first half of the perek is going to deal with Bishul, mostly Drabbanon, as I said. And the second half of the perek is going to deal with Mukta. So be ready to sharpen your knives for Mukta. Okay then? And Mukta itself will probably take us, I would say, about 6 months, without exaggerating. Because if you think Bishul is complicated, wait till you get to Mukta. But I don't want you to be discouraged, because we're going to trudge ahead, and we're going to face the challenge, and we're going to know something about Shabbos that we didn't know anything about. I mean, we knew this Mukta, and you could read all these books, you know, they give you summaries of the laws of Mukta, but those people don't know beans about Mukta. Not the people who wrote the book. They know Mukta. Otherwise, they wouldn't have the chutzpah to write the book. But those who read the book, they may know how to move a pencil on Shabbos if need be, but that's about it. They don't understand what Mukta is all about. And in terms of a blech, to understand what a blech is, and what a Garof and Kotev is, and what Shehir is, and what Chazor is, and what Kemaychel Ben Josoi is, and what Ein Bishul Acher Bishul is, and what Bishul called Tzarko, we talk about Mitztamik V'yofel, or Mitztamik V'ralo. I mean, all these concepts, which are so fundamental to Bishul, in Mirtz Hashem, B'siyat Ishmael, this is something that we want to understand. Okay then?
Thank you.
Rob,
thank
you. Did you ever ask your dad about his cholent back in the old days? Like, did they really have hot cholent for lunch? It just seems impossible.
I assume so.
With one of these ovens.
Now it's a long distance call, but I can't ask my father that. But yeah, sure. Charlotte was big, big time. Yeah, big time. Because you should know that for many people, if you don't eat cholent on Shabbos or at least something hot, then you're choshed to be a tzduki. So we want to, you know, when you eat the cholent, you should have in mind the mitzvah of lafukim and atzdukim.
I mean, especially if you're taking the coals out, and we got some ashes there, that's going to keep this fire going and keep things hot for like 15 hours or whatever it is. It just seems hard to believe. I don't know, maybe they had very good ovens, I don't know.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that as we go along. Because again, there are three types of ovens. We only discussed the Kira. The Kira has room for two pots, so there's a lot of air space for the air to go out. But we're going to soon talk about a kupach, we'll talk about a tanur, we'll talk about hatmana. I don't know if you ever heard of hatmana, you know, wrapping things up in a way that it keeps the heat in. That's going to be a whole discussion unto itself. That discussion is in the first parak of Shabbos, but we'll have to learn those sugyos as well. I want to apologize about one thing up front. Even though we're learning parak Kira, in Masechta Shabbos there's no such thing as learning a parak. Unfortunately, it just doesn't go that way. You know, we'll have to jump around from time to time. Not as much as we did during the Elzman. You know, now we're much more anchored onto the daf. And I would encourage everyone, does everybody have a Gemara? Because if I have to go through this on a daily basis, you know, if you can get a Gemara for Shia, a Rambam for Shia, if you can get a Mishnah Berurah, again, we're not going to get to the Mishnah Berurah until weeks from now, but eventually I'd like you to have a Mishnah Berurah, and that'll save a lot of the headaches that I have of photocopy. But in the meantime, these pages, please put in a folder.
Rambam or Rambam?
Rambam. The Ramban is mostly in the Melchamas Hashem, which is, if you have a good Gemara, again, it's not going to be good for Art Scroll or the other one, what's his name? Steinsaltz. I don't think Steinsaltz has the riff in the back, but if you get a regular classical Gemara that looks a little bit like this, or any size or shape thereof, it'll have the riff in the back. So that gives you the Ramban. There's also Chidushi Ramban. So for the Chidushi Ramban, we have it here on the shelves. We have the Ritva on the shelves. We have the Rashba on the shelves. So a lot of the material, Baruch Hashem, we have here. The Kol is also learning Hilchos Shabbos. So a lot of Svarim that we need are here, Baruch Hashem, in the center. And whatever else we need, hopefully I'll be able to photocopy for you, as we did in the Elzman. And I reserve the right to go back to the concept of Makalka. Because we didn't finish it yet.